the health of corporate America.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Tuesday, the 9th of April. And corporate earnings are starting to trickle out. And here to help us figure out what's going on is Julie Nieman. She's an analyst with Smith Moore & Company, and she is with us from St. Louis, as she is every Tuesday. Good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
Okay, so we've got Alcoa coming in better than expected and Cargill saying that its profits fell 42%. What's going on with corporate earnings season so far, Julie?
Well, the positive for Alcoa was they had good demand in automotive and airplanes. Those are big capital expenditures. We see a rise in automotive industry because people are basically replacing a very aged fleet. Their profit margins are very good as well, good cost containment and everything. But they have lower than expected revenue because of a very uncertain economic outlook. And that's what's going to pervade most of earnings coming in now. We've gotten most of our earnings increases due to very good profit margins. Everybody is highly productive. They're doing more. They're doing it better. They're doing it for less. But you can only squeeze so much blood out of that turnip.
Right.
And then bottom line, you have to have top line growth, demand.
And that's what we haven't seen, I guess. And the question is, you know, if you take that together with a survey that came out today that shows small business optimism is falling, I wonder, have we found a way to get consumers to start really buying again?
We really haven't, because global growth is really anemic, very much at best here. For all the rest of us, it's a very, very sluggish economy. When you don't see job expansion and people are still uncertain as to whether they're going to keep their jobs, they're not out there spending as they had in the past. 70% of our economy depends on consumer spending, and consumers are still being cautious. They're replacing some, but this is a whole scenario of keeping global growth very, very modest at this point.
Julie, I'm waiting for the day when some news comes out that you're happy about, that you see, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel in the economy.
And in about 4 or 5 years, we're going to have a lot of wonderful things to talk about.
Julie Nieman, analyst with Smith Moore & Company. Thanks as always.
You bet.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf online at marketplace.org/the Big Book.
JCPenney CEO Ron Johnson has been given the boot after just 17 months on the job. Johnson's full-scale overhaul of the department store has been disastrous for sales, which is not to say that all of his ideas were bad. Here's Marketplace's David Weinberg.
When Ron Johnson took control of JCPenney, it was in decline. So Johnson came up with a 3-year plan to turn things around. Step one, solve the problem of the deep discount. JCPenney customers had come to expect big markdowns. Analysts said that wasn't sustainable. So Johnson introduced the square deal, low prices all the time and a new logo. Deborah Kay is a retail analyst. She says the plan wasn't innovative enough, though.
Can you think of a symbol more antiquated?
The square deal didn't convince JCPenney's loyal customers to stick around after the sales stopped. Another effort to attract younger customers was the Martha Stewart pop-up store.
I think ideas of pop-up stores are very good for any store, actually, because it's a way of bringing news in.
But the news wasn't good. It sparked a costly legal battle with Macy's, which had signed an exclusive deal with Martha Stewart. Even though Johnson addressed many of the problems facing JCPenney, his solutions didn't attract new customers. Retail consultant Bert Flickinger says it may have been a case of too much too fast.
Consumers got confused, confirmed by a 25% decline in same-store sales, which is unprecedented in U.S. retail today.
With Johnson's departure, the board of JCPenney has decided not to see whether the rest of the 3-year plan will pay off. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
Last week, we talked about the state of the recovery and Washington's role in it with Larry Summers. He was chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors in President Obama's first term. Today, we are joined by the man who held that job under President George W. Bush. Glenn Hubbard is now dean of Columbia Business School. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, so I want to start by asking you the same question I asked Larry Summers, which is, what do you make of the fact that we're at record levels in the stock market with unemployment still quite high, 7.6% at last check, and the housing market just barely starting to recover?
Well, it's certainly a complicated picture in the economy. I do expect first quarter GDP growth to actually be relatively healthy. The economy has some underlying momentum in it, particularly coming from the housing sector and durable goods. But there's a lot of uncertainty in the economy, principally from public policy, and that really holds back the job market and long-term investments.
So what would you have lawmakers in Washington do right now to make the recovery as good as it can be?
Well, I think the first thing would be to reduce uncertainty by agreeing on gradual deficit reduction. You know, unfortunately, the debate in Washington and in Europe tends to be about austerity today. That's not really the issue. The issue is gradual spending restraint, principally in entitlement programs. And one can do that over a long period of time.
Well, it seems to me, though, that your own party has not been focused on that. They are talking about austerity today, right?
There's plenty of problems all around. It is the case that spending as a whole is too high in all categories, but I don't think excessive austerity today is the right answer. The right answer is a gradual change in the way we finance and fund entitlement programs.
Well, so if we're talking about changing entitlement programs, which a lot of economists on both sides of the aisle are, and in fact, politicians on both sides, I guess we come back to this same old political question that we've had for many years, which is, don't you then have to raise taxes, too, to make everybody feel like it's fair?
Well, I think it needs to be fair. And the way I would say it is, let's do the entitlement adjustments progressively. So slow down Social Security benefit growth and or Medicare subsidies for more affluent people. And that is the way to achieve fairness.
And what about the idea of tax increases to go along with that?
Well, we've had very large tax increases already. And the unfortunate issue with the entitlements is if we wanted to fund the entitlements with tax increases, we would simply have to raise taxes substantially on everyone. That, of course, is a political decision. But people shouldn't be confused that merely taxing high-income people will fix the problem.
Now, I have to ask you, because you're talking about entitlements, you were the chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors when Medicare Part D passed. So didn't that increase the cost of the entitlements?
It definitely did, and I opposed the policy. Probably one of the few advisors that did. I think we should not be adding entitlement programs that we're not going to pay for.
So you were opposed to it, but you, your argument didn't win out inside the White House.
Well, there's only one person that counts. It's the president.
Glenn Hubbard, dean of the Columbia Business School, former chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors under President Bush. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure.
And finally, to some puppy fraud going on in Argentina. A man went to an outdoor market in Buenos Aires and bought what he thought were two toy poodles. In fact, they were ferrets on steroids. The Daily Mail, which reported the story, offered up some tips to tell the difference in case this should ever happen to you, including this one. When happy, ferrets may perform a routine known as the Weasel War Dance, which is characterized by a series of hops and frenzied attempts to bump into things. Toy poodles, meanwhile, don't do that. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.